On today's edition of Locked On Nets, Josh Bass and Marcus Barahal break down Kyrie's press conference and the latest on his injury, the new Nets signings Justin Anderson and Chris Chioza, and the disappointing loss to the Toronto Raptors last night, coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, as always, my man, my co-host, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on?
Josh, good to be back on the pod. A little Sunday night action, you and me, right?
It's great. It's much better than football, that fake sport that a lot of America seems to like. We were actually watching the football games yesterday with a bunch of our pals at a sports bar, and you witnessed me getting them to turn one of the TVs to Nets Raptors.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the funniest moments of my life. We were in like a packed Bills bar during the Bills Texans game, a game that like went to overtime, was like crazy dramatic if anyone watched that. But Josh, great move, went up to the bar, asked the bartender, I think you asked a server too. And eventually, they did put Nets Raptors on one of the TVs there, and you and I think, were the only people watching. But we got to see it, so that was good. Great move by you.
Yeah. No, I said, can we get a real sport on here? And they didn't understand what that meant, but I had to do some prodding, and eventually they realized.
Yeah, they said, do you want cricket? What do you want?
Yeah, I said cricket would be great, but not right now. There was also one TV that was like Nevada and Boise State.
Yeah,
So I was like, okay, just replace the Nevada game. Like, no one cares about that. They're like, no, we need to keep that on. Like, I'll give you one of the Bills TVs. I was like, all right, that's fine.
Very obscure, like, Bills and, I guess, Boise State crossover bar.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows there's an intersection between those two fandoms, but I guess there is.
Yeah, but luckily, we did get to see the Nets play. So that, maybe not luckily, because the game did not go well.
Yeah, I saw a loss. Yeah, we saw a loss. We'll get into that in a bit. But first, there's been a lot of news, so I figured we'd start with that. Kyrie Irving addressed the media yesterday on Saturday, the first time really since his injury. A lot of interesting nuggets there. None of them really good, unfortunately. So basically, his shoulder still hurts. He can't really lift it above his arm to shoot. He's getting a cortisone shot to see if it can make some progress there. The thing with cortisone shots, though, as we all know, they do wear off. It's not something that you can get frequently because it is very debilitating to your muscles. So he's basically going to get the cortisone shot, be reevaluated in around a month's time, see what works. If not, he's probably going to need surgery at this point. He's opting not to get it right now, but if the cortisone shot doesn't work, it seems like that's going to be the natural option. And then from there, it would be a 3 to 4 month recovery, surely putting him out for the rest of the season. I think a lot of Nets fans are really concerned with the lack of transparency, especially because originally the Nets had made it seem like this was just going to be a day-to-day thing, not a big deal. Obviously, he's already been out for a couple months at this point, going to be much longer. It's concerning, Marcus, but how concerned should we be?
Extremely concerned. I'm like at a point now where part of me thinks he's just not going to play the rest of the season. He said, there's some good quotes in the Malika Andrews piece on ESPN. He said that he got a cortisone shot on December 24th, actually, to try to avoid the surgery. And then it seems like things have been kind of stagnant in the couple weeks since then. And so he said that he and the Nets medical team are going to reevaluate in a month or two whether surgery will be needed. So that already puts him out like pretty much through the All-Star break, and after that they're going to see if he needs surgery. So if he doesn't need the surgery, then maybe he's back like late February, early March, and if he does need the surgery, it would appear to be that he's out for the season. So it seems like best case they're getting him back after the All-Star break, and that's crazy. I definitely did not see this coming. I know we were like a little bit like, could go either way, but definitely excited to see how Kyrie would fare without KD in this season. A lot of people thought it could be like a combustible situation. I think people thought it would be a chance for Kyrie to prove himself and maybe do what he didn't quite do in Boston, being like that sole star. And I know Kyrie wanted that too. So to see it possibly end in a season-ending injury so early in the season would be really tough to swallow. It would kind of allow the Nets to pivot if they can just get more clarity and focus more on next year. But it still seems like even with this update and with a little bit more candor from Kyrie, everything still kind of seems in the dark and there's still a lot of mystery surrounding this. Like I said, like he could be back anytime between like February and October of next year. So still not very many answers. If anything, this just gave me more questions.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Definitely gives more questions. And I think you brought up an interesting point where, like, even though KD was going to be out basically this entire year and the Nets weren't going to really be making a splash this year, it's important for Kyrie, Karis, and Dinwiddie to all be playing together, because those are kind of guys 2 through 4 in this Nets core. Now, Kyrie obviously being number two, and then at the start of the year, you could have put Dinwiddie and Karis in any order, and I think right now it's clearly Dinwiddie number three. But this was going to be an important year to see how well those guys played together, if they meshed, and if not, how can you figure out the most optimal team moving forward when KD is back to win you a championship? And would that mean trading off Dinwiddie or Karis to get pieces that might fit a bit more seamlessly together? And now you just don't have any of that information at the helm. And obviously, Spencer's done a terrific job, but a big part of the season was seeing how those guys played together, getting them more reps. Is this going to work? Do they need more shooting? Like, what kind of players will fit well alongside them and KD? And now that's entirely out the window. And it's frustrating because it's going to make the start of next season also. Who knows who's going to be on this Nets team then, but it's going to make that integration process even more difficult, because now you have four guys who are basically, if they're all still here, no experience with playing with each other, excluding the Spencer and Karis pairing.
Yeah, all of the fit stuff now is like completely theoretical, where we at least thought we'd get to see some experimentation with that kind of thing, get to see maybe like a guy like Torian Prince in more of a reduced role and see how he would fare in a spot like that, like playing much more off ball, getting a lot more spot up opportunities. Now he's going to have to continue doing what he's been doing, which is like jacking up shots.
Missing shots. Yeah.
Hopefully some of those go in, but it's putting him into a role that it's not really, you're not going to learn anything from that, because if he succeeds in this role, it doesn't necessarily mean that he would succeed in a smaller role when Kyrie and KD are back. And if he fails in this role, he could still succeed in that smaller role. Maybe that would help, but you have no way of knowing. And so it just really clouds things going into this offseason, especially when the team is, if KD is to come back 80-90%, whatever he comes back at. And there's been some positive news on that front, at least. I've seen some reports that like his injury is maybe like healing better than expected, and it was to a part of the Achilles that was like a part that would heal faster and more like get it back to where it was, closer to where it was initially. So that's at least positive, but you have no clue who's going to play well with him, and you have hardly any evidence of who plays well with Kyrie. You have like such a small sample size of that, so it's going to make it very tough to know who should stay, who should go, who should be added. I don't envy Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson into this offseason.
Yeah, certainly not. I think it's a great point what you mentioned about Torian Prince, like the role that he has now not being indicative of the role he would have on the team next year. I think that's like such an interesting conundrum. I feel like when guys get traded, let's say a guy like Terry Rozier, who like six man on a very good team, and now basically he wants a bigger role and signs with Charlotte, and obviously they're rebuilding and now he has the ball in his hands all the time. Same with guys like Reggie Jackson, and even the opposite, where you have guys on a rebuilding team. Think about the Nets 3 or 4 years ago when they were just the kind of one of the worst teams in the NBA, and you had some of the guys there that were bright sparks like Aronda Hollis Jefferson, and then you put them in a system where the Nets have a good basketball team, and the skill sets that they were successful with back then when maybe they had the ball more or they were in a more complementary role, and now they're being asked to either do more or less, they just can't fit into that new role. So it's, I think that's why it's so important in the NBA. Obviously you need talented players, but you also really need good insight into seeing how guys are going to fit on a successful team. Like guys that can put up good stats or maybe contribute slightly to winning when you have a bad team, that's fine, but you really, the goal is to win a championship, and not every player is going to be successful helping you get there. They might be better suited to being on a worse team where they can just put up numbers.
Yes, it's completely, seems somewhat random, because there's guys like Kevin Love, who in Minnesota, people are like, can he win? Comes to the Cavs, they win a title. Same with Kyrie, even like in Cleveland, people were questioning if he could lead. People still question that, but he was definitely like able to be a key part of a championship team. You have a guy like James Harden, who went the other way, who was like, had a smaller role on a great team, goes to his own team, and it's like, can he step up and take that next step? And he clearly can. But it just seems like certain guys can play in certain situations, and then there's other guys like James Harden who can kind of fit no matter what role you give them. And obviously a guy like Torian Prince is not in the class of really any of those three guys. Even Kevin Love right now, when he's like whipping the ball at Jetty Osman's ankles. But just like, it would have been nice to see him in that spot and to see if maybe even like a J.R. Smith type, who is kind of like branded as a knucklehead when he's with the Knicks and then is still that with the Cavs, but is able to like get it together and hit big shots down the stretch. Like maybe Prince could be that kind of guy where if he's on a bad team, he's exposed. And if he's on a team where he doesn't have to do a ton, maybe he can contribute at a higher level. But there's just no way to know right now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely frustrating. I think, you know, I've loved the job Sean Marks has done since he came in. But I think one of the big things that we've all noticed is that the Nets are very tight-lipped about injuries. Mm-hmm. They're not transparent at all. And Sean Marks, you know, he gets it from being part of the Spurs franchise there and learning at the tutelage of Pop and R.C. Buford. But that only works for the Spurs because they have the track record to back it up. They have multiple championships. They've been successful for decades. And they have the kind of ability there where people don't question them as much because they show they know what they're talking about. Sean Marks has done a really great job rebuilding this Nets team into what they are today. And getting, obviously, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to bona fide stars in this league and surefire Hall of Famers. But they don't have the success yet. They never got out of the first round, and they never won more than 42 games. And you have to give the fans more transparency, especially when you're trying to build up a fan base. And right now, just I think every Nets fan, from diehard even down to casual, just the people that are following the league, are very frustrated with how this Kyrie Irving process was handled. We'll get to the Caris LeVert stuff in the context of the Toronto game. But injuries, since Sean Marks has been the GM of this team, injuries have not been handled well, and it seems like the Nets performance team has made things worse in certain circumstances and has really not been a beneficial component of the organization to the players.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It does seem like they've had a ton of injuries like the last two seasons, like at least since I've been following them more closely. Just seeing like, even like Dinwiddie missed time last year, D'Lo, Karras,
Jeremy Lin,
yeah, and like even like random guys who missed like a game or two here and there. I'm not sure if like I have no insight into that side of things, but it's definitely curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with that is like you say, hey, these guys are getting injured, and you don't want to rush them back, of course. You want to keep them at a long time and make sure they get healthy, which is, like, whatever. There's no point of keeping them at longer than they need to be, but it seems like that's what the Nets do. But then from there, if they're getting re-injured, that's a huge problem because then you're taking your time, but they're still getting injured after the fact. That means you're doing something wrong, basically.
Yeah, it's weird because then you have that side of it, but then you also see guys like Jared Dudley, Damari Carroll, guys who like leave the organization who have like nothing but good things to say. So clearly like it's a player friendly organization. I think that they're doing what they can to appeal to players and to appease them. And that's kind of partially at least what got them Kyrie and KD in the first place. But yeah, maybe more transparency. Maybe that would shine a light on a player where they're seen as more injury prone and maybe they're withholding information because they are trying to protect the player, which is definitely like that's fair. That's one way to go about it. But from our perspective, it's definitely frustrating. It's probably frustrating if you're Kenny, if he's not being given the full info of things. I'm sure they're telling him behind the scenes, but to have to answer questions constantly about it, it's got to be wearing on him. So I definitely see, or I could see why they would be doing it that way, but it's still frustrating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just needed to vent on that. next up, couple roster moves. Nwaba obviously had that devastating Achilles injury. He's out for the year. He was cut. The Nets signed Justin Anderson in his place to a 10-day, and also cut Henry Ellenson, we hardly knew ye, and signed former Florida guard who Chris Chioza, who I think is best known for the insane buzzer beater he had in the tournament to beat Wisconsin. Mm.
I think he's any also thoughts? He's a G League guy now, or he has.
Yeah, he's in the G League. Yeah. Any thoughts on Chioza or Justin Anderson?
Not particularly on Chioza. Another great name to add to the Nets roster, though. With Anderson, he's at least like been in the NBA. He kind of fits that size profile of a guy that would help them. He's 6'6". He could maybe contribute if he's given an opportunity. I kind of think of him as like a slightly poor man's Nwaba. Like he could kind of bring that energy. He's got pretty good size. He's not going to like make a huge impact, obviously, but I think he could be a rotation player, I think.
Yeah, no, I think first on Chioza, I think that as you mentioned, Ian Eagle is going to have a field day with his name. he's more so the point guard I was telling them to look for, kind of like a caretaker type that can get them into the offense. He's undersized, but he's quick, knows where to be. So I'm kind of interested in. I don't think he's going to play really, mm-hmm. but he's more so a developmental guy for them to take a flyer on. And if this was like let's say a month ago when Karis was still recovering, it would be nice to have a guy like Chioza, because I just frankly have a lot more faith in him to execute the offense than I do a guy like Theo Pinson, just because he is a more natural point guard. But hopefully this is a moot point with Karis being back mostly in the fold, and I think Chioza will get a lot of run in Long Island. And then on Justin Anderson, I mean, he's bounced around a ton. He was pretty highly regarded out of UVA. He was the top guy on that Joe Harris team. But he really just hasn't performed in the league. Like, he's very strong, has a good body, as you mentioned. But on offense, he really just can't get it done at all. He's been a really inconsistent three-point shooter. Looking at his stats now, 30% career from behind the arc. Doesn't make a ton of plays in the open court. So he's more so just kind of a stout defender type. But besides that, is really not bringing anything to the table on offense. And I don't love him. I don't see him getting a ton of minutes. I think TLC fills a similar role. I think Anderson's more accomplished on defense, but TLC's offensive profile kind of blows him out of the water.
Yeah, yeah. And I've like been semi-impressed with Luau Cabarro this recent stretch. I think he's played really well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think maybe if he fades back, he didn't have a great game yesterday against Toronto. We'll see what Anderson can do. But I think, I mean, with the way the Nets team is going right now, they're starved for offense. It's not the defense that's been the biggest bugaboo. So I don't expect a ton of Anderson. He is shooting the ball a bit better in the G League this year, 35% on three. If he can make that kind of 34-35% in the NBA, then that could be at least something of interest, as he has like a relatively bankable skill, but overall he just doesn't really have much of an offensive profile. So we'll see if Kenny can coach him up. But speaking of that Raptors game yesterday, Marcus, the Nets were winning pretty big at the start, had a really good thing going. Raptors went on a 12-0 run, and kind of before you blinked, they were right back in it, and then the fourth quarter they just took off. And I think a lot of what this comes down to is the extra shots. I mean, the Raptors shot the ball 30 more times. Nets had 24 turnovers compared to the Raptors, just 7. Raptors, 15 offensive rebounds compared to the Nets, 6. And when that happens, even if you do shoot the ball really well like the Nets did, it's going to be tough to overcome that and win the game.
Yeah, that's terrible. I think the Nets led by like 16 at one point in the second quarter. You and I were rejoicing. Things looked great. LeVert was looking pretty solid, honestly, in the limited time we did see him. And then everything just fell apart in that fourth quarter stretch. Nets got outscored by 16 in the fourth quarter. They got outscored by 23 total in the second half. After starting really strong, they just couldn't really do anything to stop Toronto, and they could not score on the other end. I think there was a stretch where Toronto was like I saw this on Twitter. They were like 5 for 8 or something, and they were on like a 10-0 run. Like they missed like 3 shots in that stretch, and they were still way ahead of where the Nets were going. So they couldn't really get anything to go on either side of the ball in the second half and in the fourth quarter specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like Van Fleet, he's someone that the Nets had a lot of trouble guarding. 29 points for him and 11 assists, and he was doing it very efficiently. Like, they don't really have, like, the people that they would have now to put on a fast point guard like that would be Pinson, who you don't want to play because he's a huge offensive liability. And I guess LeVert is probably the best guy, but he only played 15 minutes last night getting back in the swing of things. So without anyone that can really contain Fred, he was going to go off for them. Chris Boucher had 6 offensive rebounds. Like, DeAndre Jordan definitely did not have a good game. 5 turnovers also, which is kind of all over the place. Miscommunications with guys cutting to the basket. Not his finest performance. And Toronto just gives the Nets fits, it seems like. Regardless, you know, they don't have Kawhi Leonard anymore. They don't have Pascal last night or Marc Gasol. But, you know, their system, their institutional guys there that can just execute their scheme are so solid that it really didn't matter.
Yeah, they've won 17 of 18 against the Nets, and I think you made a good point about it. It kind of is just a tough matchup with Lowry and Van Vliet. They don't really have someone to guard either of those guys, so if both are on the court, that's pretty tough. And they shared the court a lot because Lowry played 43 minutes in this game, and Van Vliet played 36. So when both of those guys are out there, like you mentioned, the Nets can maybe stop one of them, but stopping both is tough without LeVert at full strength and without Nwaba for the season. Like, he would have been another guy who you could kind of throw at that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's just tough to, like, especially Karis comes back, plays a nice game, 13 points, 5 of 7 from the field. I mean, he was hitting some nice step-back jumpers, his threes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like his shot looks so ugly, especially when he's off the dribble. He's just, like, his mechanics are all over the place. But it was going in, so I have to give him credit there. And to squander that and also a classic Joe Harris game, the type that I think that you gave as the prototype last time for what a Joe Harris game should be, 18 points, 4 or 6 from the field, 3 or 5 from 3, getting to the line 8 times, and to squander that is unfortunate. But, you know, it happens when you're playing one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference in Toronto.
Yeah. LeVert, I agree about his shot. It looks very funky. His whole game is, like, pretty herky-jerky, but he is relatively effective. The movement of it does remind me of CJ McCollum, but McCollum's jumper is just like so pure. When he does rise up, LeVert doesn't have that, but he has a lot of that same like stop and start, a lot of like deceleration in his game. But it was good to see him like shooting those shots confidently, at least. Those 2 threes were really nice, like you mentioned, seeing him attack and pull up from the mid range or get into little floaters, passes inside. So it was just good to see him back and to have someone who could handle the ball when Dinwiddie was on the bench. That was very nice. Garrett Temple did come back also. He was fine in this game. That like got rid of both Musa and Pinson from the rotation, which is a good
thing. Thank God.
Yeah, they just need to have it translate into wins going forward because they have now lost 5 straight and are like drifting towards the Magic, maybe catching them soon.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they play the Magic tomorrow, Monday's game. Mm-hmm. If the Magic win that, they're the 7th seed. They'll be they'll be tied in terms of games, but the Magic will have a slightly better winning percentage, so they'll be ahead of the Nets. And, like, you know, given the Magic strength, obviously no Jonathan Isaac, and he's been just an absolute standout this year defensively and a solid scorer as well who can make plays inside, but you have to wonder, are the Nets going to be able to score efficiently against this Orlando defense? And also, to make matters worse, Karis, obviously, you know, when you come back from a thumb injury after 7 weeks, you're clearly going to be so out of cardio shape that you need to sit out and rest from playing 15 minutes. So I have no idea what that's about. Like, it's really just preposterous to me, but they've made that decision, so they've ruled him out for tomorrow's game. It's not a recurrence of the injury. It's just load management for his injured thumb.
Yeah, maybe he needs to talk to cardio king Wilson Chandler, get him back into shape.
He should have. Yeah, cardio king should just be the next trainer. He doesn't even need to play.
Yeah, they could use some help on the training staff. I mean, yeah, we mentioned all those injuries up top, you know.
Yeah, can you believe cardio king played 23 minutes last night and didn't take a single shot? Like, what is he doing if he's not scoring?
He's sprinting. Even? He's using his cardio.
He's just sprinting, yeah.
He had one point.
Yeah, yeah, got to the line. So, yeah, I mean, especially without Karras, you know, that means Pinson and probably Musa, I think, over Pinson, because he did have a really nice performance against Dallas and showed some spark there. So he'll probably get some run, but I'm not super optimistic going to Orlando and playing the Magic. But I have, at least I'm happy that Kurucs has been kind of a steady part of the rotation. And even though his stats aren't blowing anyone out of the water, I think he has made a positive impact.
Yeah, and just seeing him out there is good. The length he has, I forgot like how easily he can pump fake from three and take like one dribble and be at the rim. So that's like an aspect that the Nets don't really have. I mean, they'll have it once KD is back, but right now they do not have that. So it's good to see him out there. I agree with you also on Musa probably playing over Pinson in the Magic game, especially with Temple back to take more of the ball handling with the second unit.
We'll see how it all shakes out. The Nets desperately need a victory, having lost five in a row. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, everywhere. We will be there. Rate us, review us. We love to see what you're hearing. And until next time, be well.
Bye.